listening to the Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast. Hi, this is Shane Vanderhart. Welcome back to another episode. We've had a busy week this week. We've already heard from one candidate in Iowa House District 84. Today, we're going to hear from another Republican candidate in the four-way primary in that House district. We're going to try to have every candidate on before the primary. The candidate I talked to today is Martin Amos. But before we get to that conversation, first a word from our sponsors.
At American Principles Project, we believe that human dignity should be at the heart of public policy. We work in all 50 states and in Washington, D.C. to promote life, religious freedom, local control over education, authentic economic progress for working Americans, and a return to constitutional principles such as federalism. Want to help American Principles Project? Visit our website today, AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. That's AmericanPrinciples, P-L-E-S, Project.org. Sign up for email updates. Help us out. We want to work with you. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a life insurance plan that makes sense for you, call my friend Travis Riswold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. That's Travis Riswold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Without further ado, here's my conversation with Martin Amos, one of the Republican candidates in Iowa House District 84. Martin, thank you so much for taking time to talk with our listeners and welcome to the Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast. A question I ask every candidate, regardless of what they're running for, from the presidential candidates I've been able to interview in my time blogging at caffeinatedthoughts.com, as well as state Senate and state House candidates. What prompted you to want to run?
Well, my main reasons I wanted to run was twofold. One, I saw the direction of government going in an anti-constitutional direction, and I wanted to do my part to steer that back towards what the founders had in mind. And two, I see the government having gotten larger and larger, taxing me more, regulating me more, and them spending more. And I wanted to reverse it that as well.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, experience, education.
Sure. I grew up in Mount Pleasant, Iowa. And after high school, I went to Iowa State University to get a Bachelor of Science in Restaurant, Hotel, and Institution Management.
Okay.
After that, we went to Dallas, and that's where I spent time as a kitchen manager and then training managers and a corporate troubleshooter. But when my wife was pregnant with my daughter, we moved back to Iowa to be closer to the grandparents. And that's when I started wholesaling food to restaurants and stuff. And after taking the worst route of this in the state and building it up to the best, they started promoting me up the ranks into regional sales managers. But finally, they transferred me up to Minnesota to run the entire sales and distribution division of that company. And then after that, after about 30 years of that, then I kind of went into semi-retirement, bought a semi-truck, and started distributing the very product I was selling for years. I've been married to the same woman, Nancy Amos. Her maiden name was Hoover, for 35 years. It'll be 36 in October. But I've actually known her since we were in kindergarten.
Oh, wow.
And she's still with me.
Well, that's good.
I've got one daughter. She's 28. We're very fortunate. We lost a few in miscarriages and stuff. And I have one grandson, and he's 10. So that's our family. Oh, and my dad's still around. My mom passed away about 17 years ago. So we're a very small but close-knit family.
Sounds great. So one of the topics I like discussing is education, since it takes up a huge amount of the general budget in the state of Iowa, 57% this last budget. That's including Regent University, community colleges, K-12 education. And it seems like over the years we've had increasing centralization of control and surrounding policymaking, even school finance. The phrase local control in education, I was wondering, what does that mean to you and what does that ideally look like?
Yeah, so I'm old enough to remember more local control.
Mm-hmm.
Not total local control like say when my dad was young, but definitely a lot more local control than there is now. And that has cost local school districts a lot of money as the state has gotten more and more involved. You've got situations where the state could mandate standards, let's say for the high school, 3 years of math and science, et cetera, and all that is revenue neutral. Mm-hmm. But when they start putting mandates onto schools to comply with certain things, and then they turn around and don't send the monies that go with that mandate, then our property taxes end up going up to help fund these mandates.
But right.
They're not coming from the local districts; they're coming from the state. I'd like to help reverse that trend. The purpose of education is to not just feed students information, but try to instill a desire to learn so they can learn for a lifetime. Because one of the things that's going to happen over their lifetime is that they may end up changing occupations. They may end up changing just jobs, just because, let's say they work someplace and it closes for whatever reason, and they've got to find something else. And so with a good basis, that a foundation, and then a continued desire to learn, they're more adaptable in the workplace once they're grown up. The other thing that's needed with that desire of learning then is we become a society that becomes more adaptable to discover solutions to everyday problems. This is how inventions come about.
Mm-hmm.
And I know enough individuals that didn't have a formal education outside of high school that went on to invent things just because they had that curiosity and they had that basis to go with. And maybe in school they were told that they weren't amount to anything, but they kept at it because they just had a keen interest in things. In fact, being in the trucking industry right now, I've met drivers who think that they're dumb as rock, but then they can tell you every little bit of how to fix that vehicle.
Right.
And I know a diesel mechanic. When you go to a shop, let's say a Volvo shop or a Mack dealer or whatever, and they're charging anywhere between $120 and $170 an hour to get
right.
your truck fixed.
Yeah.
So why these kids have been beat down while they're in school just disturbs me something terrible. the other problem with regurgitating just facts without using any thought process is evident now in a lot of college campuses where these kids have idolized the professors, and these professors are feeding them a lot of propaganda and absent of logic to come to that conclusion as to how they got there. And then we see college students who are pushing for, say, a socialist agenda instead of being awe-inspired as to how great this Constitution is and freedom in general and the free enterprise system.
Okay. What's your view of the Common Core state standards that state?
I don't like them.
Okay.
I think that I don't like them at all. I think it complicates this teaching process, and it's a one-size-fits-all solution, and it's a federal program, and I know the state had to sign on, but it's almost like they were a bunch of lemmings that when they went to sign on to this, just trusting the educrats that this was the best solution. And now that they're in the middle of it, they're finding out it's not. Mm-hmm. And I love math. Our family is very good at math. I've got
God bless you.
yeah. And
I would never, those words would never cross my lips.
And I even got a brother who's a math teacher. And we're going over this Common Core math with my grandson right now. And the way he has to arrive to a solution is just unreal. And then he gets frustrated, and then he thinks he's dumb because he can't get it.
Right.
And so we end up just showing it our way, and then he gets it, and then he's all happy, and he feels he's accomplished something. And that's what's missing in teaching right now, you know.
Right. Right. So another education question. What is your view on school choice?
I'm a very strong proponent of school choice for multiple reasons. One, first of all, we always talk about we want choice in this, that, and the other thing, and that's part of freedom. So how an individual educates their child is the paramount choice there. Number two, what I like about choice is that it spurs competition. And so if the private school, whether it be secular or religious, or if they homeschool, mm-hmm. but let's just stick with the private school, for instance, against a public school. And if the private school is doing well, and that parent wants to send that child to a private school, you get a better education, they must want it really bad because they're still paying property taxes, but right. they're spending the extra to educate their child better. That should be a signal to the public school to say, hey, wait a minute. I need to educate these children better. Well, they say, I don't like the fact that money may travel away from our school district and to that child. Well, that is a monetary incentive for that school to do better as well, mm-hmm. because then they can retain those children. Where if it does not follow the child, then there's no incentive for that school district to improve. You know, hey, you're stuck, you have to be here, so you just take what we give you and that's that.
Right.
And there's a lot of that attitude in government in general. And our public schools are pretty much government schools.
Yeah, not pretty much.
It's a monopoly. Yeah. And with any monopoly, you don't get served. And and there's no incentive to do better. Where in the private sector, you have incentive to do better.
Okay. Recently, the Iowa legislature passed and Governor Reynolds signed a fetal heartbeat abortion ban protecting preborn babies from 6 weeks on, provided with they listed several exceptions to that. Is that a bill that you would have supported if it had that had you been elected prior to that bill's passing?
Oh yes, big time. In fact, I jumped up in joy when I heard that one pass. I was actually praying for its passage. I was trying to contact legislators as well as other individuals to contact their legislators to try to get this passed. It had overwhelmingly passed in the Senate, and there were some holdups in the House, which then they wrote some changes, and then it finally passed in the House. The reason I'm very ecstatic about it is for a couple of reasons. One, I think life is the most important thing. Without that, then we can't even have liberty, you know.
Right.
But the other thing is the Declaration of Independence defines us as a people. And they start out with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And it's in that order for a reason. These men were godly men. Now, some say, well, some were deists, but they were still had a reverence for God, some of these men. And they constructed a constitution to limit government so that it wouldn't trample on those rights. We don't have the right to choose murder just because we want to, because the person's right to live is paramount. Mm-hmm. And anytime one right tramples on it, your rights stop, and it starts trampling on someone else's. So the big question is, do we extend that right to the child that's unborn? And because everyone says, oh, yeah, once they're born, yeah, that's no issue. But I believe that right does extend to those that are unborn, you know. And to say that a person is no longer living when their heartbeat stops, then the logical conclusion that a person is living when their heartbeat starts is not out of the realm, you right. know. There's a, I mean, we have scientific proof, which we did not have back in 73 when Roe v. Wade was litigated.
Right.
That, that not only does life start at conception, but, we have scientific evidence now that shows that after a few days, there's signal from this new life to the host, to the mother, that, hey, I'm not a bad thing in here. Don't send your antibodies to kill me. You know, I'm a separate life.
Right.
And that's how the two can coexist together. The argument says, well, a wife or a mother can do what she wants with her body, but it ceased to be just one body at this point. That
right.
Now it's two different lives. And so, and then also Fourth Amendment protections of due process. That child's innocent and it's not getting any due process as well as to whether it's going to be executed or not.
Yeah.
So,
Fifth Amendment, but, I think you're thinking of, but yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on, speaking of Bill of Rights and we got the Second Amendment.
Sure.
And the Second Amendment has been under attack, both at the federal as well as by Democrats at the state level. I don't know if you had a chance to watch Iowa Firearms Coalition put together a montage of statements made by Democratic gubernatorial candidates on their view of gun control. How do you believe gun rights in the Second Amendment should be protected in the state of Iowa?
Okay, so if anything, we should loosen regulatory controls instead of strengthen or making them tougher, because the law-abiding citizen is just that. He's not. You're just making one more hurdle for that person to obtain their firearms.
Mm-hmm.
The criminal element by nature is not obeying the law.
Right.
And most killings are done by stolen weapons, illegally obtained weapons, and they've already broken a host of laws. You look at almost every single case, they've broken a host of different laws. Plus, both murder and attempted murder is against the law. And so we got to deal with the lawbreaker. Now, whether that a lawbreaker is insane or not, I think there's pure evil in this world. And we got to be careful because insanity has a strict definition. And that individual, once convicted, would not be spending a lifetime in prison. They would be housed in a facility. So it disturbs me how the language is being changed and twisted just to get their point of view and these laws passed. The Second Amendment was to protect us from a tyrannical government, pure and simple. These guys had just fought the most powerful nation in the world to get their freedom, and there was no way they wanted a government to do that again to them. So, yes, it's more than just defense of our own individuals. It's a defense of our way,
okay,
our American way.
Just a couple follow-up questions on that. Would you recently, both the Iowa House and the Iowa Senate, this last General Assembly, passed a constitution or a resolution that would bring forth a proposed constitutional amendment, basically adding Second Amendment language to the Iowa Constitution.
Yes, I'm very supportive of that.
Okay, fact, all right, yeah, because if you're elected, if elected, you'll have the opportunity to vote for it again, so it could actually go before voters. So good,
yes.
Good to know. Do you support constitutional carry?
Yes, I do.
Okay,
I do. And something else I support is getting rid of the gun-free zone in the schools.
Okay.
Because, you know, if a teacher or say a janitor, whoever within the school district is already licensed to carry, like myself, they should be able to carry within that building as well. They've already went through the background check. They've already went through the training and stuff. And to have to leave that pistol at home or at the inside their vehicle or whatever is, in my opinion, outrageous, you know. And this is a no-cost extra line of defense to protect those children in case there are some wacko that decides they want to wipe out as many kids and teachers as possible. So,
right.
Again, my brother I was telling you about, he's a math teacher. He was also a Marine.
Okay.
He went to Iraq. So he knows how to use more than just a pistol.
Yeah.
And so I have no doubt in my mind that someone like that would have no trouble taking out some little snot-nosed brat that decides they want to kill our kids. So,
okay. Tax reform was also passed by the Iowa legislature, and it obviously it was a kind of a first step. The deeper tax cuts won't happen unless they meet a particular revenue trigger by fiscal year 2022, which amounts basically a 4% increase in revenue each year leading up to 2022, $8.1 billion, I believe, is their target amount. Does that tax reform go far enough in your mind? What is the ideal tax reform, tax relief package in your mind?
Okay, that's good. Two different questions there, but yes, it did not go far enough. I was actually a big supporter. I was a bigger supporter of the Senate plan,
right,
before the House got into it than this current plan, because the Senate plan was going to drop the corporate tax rate from 12% to 7%, and that was needed, and that was huge. But now it only dropped it to 9.8%,
right?
So we're still the highest, or tied to the highest in the nation. The individual rate was also going to drop from 8.98% to 6.3%, and where now it's at 8.53. And when I tell individuals, when I'm knocking doors about that, a lot of the responses raised eyebrows or why bother, you know?
Right.
And,
well, there'll be deeper cuts. Yeah. By 2022, there'll be deeper cuts, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's another thing that this, projected 4% growth to meet these, tax cuts, is in my opinion, a little unrealistic too.
Okay.
If they had done the deeper cuts to help spur economic opportunity, then I don't think, those projections would have been out of the realm, but because they're requiring them to be 4% at 4 years in a row. And it showed to me that there was a greater desire for Des Moines to, in their mind, keep more of their money because they don't want to do the necessary spending cuts that should accompany this. So yeah, I would have made it stronger in such. My ideal actually would be a no income tax.
Okay.
The whole idea of an income tax just bothers me anyways, because it is the state putting a claim on my wages, on my work, and that is work I've done. Now,
so you'd support it.
I believe that there should be taxes, and mm-hmm. taxes to me should be more of a use type tax, fee okay. type tax, you know, like sales tax. That kind of thing. There are states like Texas, Tennessee, you know, South Dakota, Florida, et cetera, that have no income tax, and you're doing just fine.
Yeah. So I would assume that you believe the state of Iowa has a spending problem, not a revenue problem. Correct?
Yes, correct. Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
How do we address the spending problem?
Well, two different ways. One, they've got that 99% rule on their spending, and that's legislated. But that's based on projections. And again, they've been projecting way too rosy of a picture. Mm-hmm. So, if the say Iowa growth rate tends to be in that 2-3%, and we're projecting 4%, we've already outspent before we've spent our first dollar just on paper.
Right.
And so that's one way we can start doing that. The other thing is that as I've been going around and I've talked to several state workers, and first thing out of their lips is, yeah, I see all kinds of waste. So there's definitely waste in government within these departments. Mm-hmm. I personally would like to incentivize employees within these departments that if they find certain waste, and those cost-cutting solutions would save the state, let's say, $50,000, $100,000, whatever it is, that they get a small percentage of it as a reward, say 0.5% or 1% as a bonus mm-hmm. for helping the taxpayer save a good deal of money in Iowa. We're also looking at, maybe we need a another constitutional amendment in the state of Iowa that restricts spending. But because we can't really print our own money, I don't know if that's really necessary. We just can't do it now. So that may just be a waste of paper there. But the state auditor had found $14 million in waste and fraud last year. And so maybe what we need to do is get her an extra employee or two to do even more investigation within the state to find more of this wasted fraud. I'm pretty sure that they would pay for themselves if they're finding that kind of money.
Right. Last question. First, where it's kind of multi-part here. First, where can people learn more about your campaign? And then secondly, is there anything that you wanted to discuss today that we didn't get to?
Ask your first question again. I didn't hear it.
Sure. Where can people learn more about your campaign?
Oh, okay. So if they type in Martin Amos for Iowa House, I have a Facebook page there, and we've got different video clips and other things there that they can learn more about me. And that's probably the primary reason right now, or way to learn about me.
Okay.
And your second part of the question.
Yeah, basically, is there anything you want to make sure our listeners take away from this conversation that maybe we didn't get to today?
No, not really. The main thing is, I guess to all sum it up, I'm an individual that has been solving problems for many years. That was my job. And so with that kind of experience in the real world, I'll say, the business world, that I'll take that along with a constitutional perspective and a Christian perspective to look at every situation, look at every problem, dig a little deeper so we're not putting just a surface solution on, but a real solution, so that we can solve these issues on a more long-term basis. So that's why I'm running, and that's the approach I'll be taking when I get to Des Moines.
Well, Martin, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. Best of luck to you next week. And, you know, should you win the nomination, I'm sure we'll have you back on before the general election.
Thank you for having me on. Thanks.
No problem. Take care.
You bet. Bye.
Bye. And that concludes today's episode of the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. If you happen to be listening to this podcast somewhere other than on our website, please be sure to check out caffeinatedthoughts.com. Again, that's caffeinatedthoughts.com, or just Google Caffeinated Thoughts and it'll show up at the top of your search screen. Also, be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, sign up for our email updates. That way you don't miss a single article. Until next time, my friends, this is Shane Vanderhart. Take care.